Members, we're going to get started. We don't have a quorum yet, but I suspect within 30 seconds we will. And so, with that, we're going to do three things today, or we're going to have three items today. We've got two bills that we will be acting on a little later. But before we do that, we're going to hear a presentation from Karen Balmer of the Minnesota Board of Teaching on the Board of Teaching, giving us an update of their rulemaking activities. And actually, as I was sitting here looking through copies of the PowerPoint, I thought, I'm not sure I ever had like a full presentation of the Board of Teaching, so I'm really looking forward to this. And that's certainly my bad as the chair over the last few years. We should have had more time to do reflective understanding of what this entity has been charged to do and what it's been doing. So with that, members, I'm going to ask Karen Balmer, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching, to come forward. And she's got a PowerPoint presentation, and there are copies of the presentation in your packet if you wish to follow along that way as well. Good morning, Ms. Balmer.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the chance to be here. I too am looking forward to the opportunity to just share some of what we are doing, who we are, what we've got going on at the Board of Teaching. So I'm going to err on the side of brevity through this presentation. You have a hard copy as well. And then certainly welcome you to point me, redirect me back to places where I've gone too fast or you'd like additional information. So what I thought I would do is just show you a visual of the Board of Teaching goals, and you have this as a separate handout in your materials as well. But annually, the Board of Teaching does set goals, and this model is one that we started actually in 2008-2009, and we're looking at big areas and then goals within those areas. And as you can see from the types of things that we're thinking about and working on, they're not the kinds of issues that you figure out or fix or resolve within a year's time. These are big policy issues, big policy questions, things like reciprocity, alternative pathways, program approval, ongoing continuous improvement. All these things are large policy areas, and I can certainly talk more specifically about any of them that you have a particular interest in, but wanted you to see at least the way we try to frame our work and think about our works from a strategic standpoint each year. Specific to this conversation, the focus is going to be rulemaking that we are either currently working on or that we are hoping to initiate and hoping to get going on. So there are six big areas that I thought I would touch on, and you see them listed here. And so the first one I'll go into is the paraprofessional credential, and a brief history there. This is one that came from you, the legislature, in terms of our a requirement to adopt rules in this area. It started in 2003, and you've got the language from that session that directed the Board of Teaching to do this rulemaking. There was additional language in 2007 directing us to do this rulemaking. And to fill in the gaps here, the Board of Teaching history, so there was the legislative side, there were two times when you directed us to get this work done. What happened on the board side was after that 2003 legislation, the board at that time did initiate rulemaking, did not complete it for a couple of reasons. And I would say that is not a proud part of our recent history, but that is the fact. We were directed to do it. We did not complete it at that time. Then in 2007-08, after the second directive from the legislature, we got a working group going. We went through a rulemaking process and a hearing, and we were very hopeful about the proposed rule that we had. Unfortunately, the administrative law judge, or ALJ, who is assigned to review the matter preside at the hearing, found that that our rule was flawed, and we were not able to adopt it. So we are back at it. We have been back at work. We think that we have addressed those issues. We actually expanded the working group that we had initially convened in 2007-08 include a couple more stakeholder groups that had strong concerns. We believe we have addressed those ALJ concerns, and actually there's a hearing set in just a couple weeks on March 10th. We are very hopeful that this voluntary paraprofessional credential will be adopted as a result of this work. So I have for you just information that I pulled a couple of the subparts from our draft language. The highlights here are that this credential is not a license. It is voluntary. It's not a requirement for employment. And it's based on competencies. The scope of practice is really for paraprofessionals in the field to demonstrate that they have additional training and expertise in these 9 core competencies, and it's for the purpose of assisting a licensed teacher. It's not to become a teacher. It's for them to assist a teacher in a meaningful way. You can see the credential requirements that we have. And then I pulled just language that was really one of the major concerns raised in the last time around, and that was related to the matter of who would verify the competencies. And we initially, in the last time around, had this done at the local level. There were a lot of concerns raised about how they would, how local administrators would be equipped to do this work and the resources needed to do the work. So now in this version, we, the Board of Teaching at the state level, are going to do this work. Again, this, I'm certainly happy to come back to this if you have additional questions. But I'll move on to another area of rulemaking, recent rulemaking, and it related to reading standards, technology standards, and middle-level licensure. And you can see here, and I'm sorry it's small print, but this, I just wanted to give you a visual of all the licensure areas that were impacted by this rulemaking initiative. There were many. And on the right-hand side, you can see the initiative area. Most of the areas or licensure fields impacted were in the area of reading. We have done a lot of work, particularly for our elementary and early childhood teachers, to increase their depth of preparation specific to reading. We're thrilled about that. We have actually programs now coming in that have embedded these new standards into coursework and programs. We're thrilled about it. But we also did a lot of work in the content areas. We're not trying to make our math teachers reading teachers, but try to make sure that our math teachers, as an example, are able to know when they have a struggling reader and help them access the content. Because we know if a student can't read, they won't succeed in content. So we just want our content teachers to help their students access the content. Not to remediate or fix a reading problem, but to help them understand how they might differentiate instruction and scaffold and use, in the math example, graphical or representations to help a student in a different way. So we're thrilled about these standards that are moving through. And the work actually came from recommendations from 3 different task forces. The technology task force was convened for many months in 2007, as well as a middle level task force throughout 2007, which was followed by a series of regional stakeholder meetings that we held at St. Cloud State University in Mankato and then here in the Twin Cities to try to solicit additional regional input. Then reading, of course, was its own task force, and that worked for many, many months. We did also need to undergird that task force work with some real targeted outreach to additional stakeholder groups. So we did that. And then all that to say that in terms of the process, we started the rulemaking in July of 2008. We were able to move through the rulemaking process in about a year's time, just about exactly 1 year's time, and the rules were adopted this past July, 2009. So now this school year, our colleges and universities are making the program changes necessary to reflect these new requirements, and then these new requirements and standards will become actually effective September 1 of this year. So you can see the rulemaking process is really been a 3-year process for us in terms of starting with task forces and stakeholder input. Now in the fall of 2010, we'll come out with actual rules effective and embedded into licensure programs.
And Ms. Ballmer, is that typical to have a process that span? Obviously, the formal rulemaking process itself encompasses a chunk of time, and properly so. Here you're describing a minimum of 3-year, sort of the possible culmination of a 3-year process. And it looks like because you were engaging with different interested parties and experts in very specific fields, is that typical of the work that, is this particular process, is that a different one?
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. And this one is a little bit of an outlier because it was 3 different task forces, and we needed to roll them into one rulemaking initiative because there was overlap in the, for example, the elementary rule was impacted both by the middle level and by the reading. And so we wanted to do that all together in one rulemaking. So this one is probably a little bit longer. You will see, though, in some of the other ones I'll talk about, that we our process has been to date to engage stakeholders in a significant process. You'll see in a couple others coming up that those processes prior to the launch of rulemaking has been a year to a year and a half's worth of work in our recent initiatives.
And then does that work, Ms. Palmer, does that... I'm just trying to get at how the board continuously does its work. Does the board sit and kind of strategize on emerging areas, looking down the road, and regularly engage different groups to provide it advice? And what I'm getting at here is that it's one thing to set your mind to do rulemaking. It's another thing to just, even before you do that, inform yourself on, you know, whether there's a need for it, what are the emerging issues. How does the board typically approach its work in that way?
Mr. Chair, another really important question. And I would say it's sort of a mixed bag in terms of why we initiate rulemaking. Mm-hmm. In the examples I've got on the screen here for you, technology, that actually began because we had an issue with a very small endorsement field that's called keyboarding for computer applications, and there was a real specific issue with that very small endorsement area. And the board discussion was, well, we could go in and we could fix that keyboarding issue, or we could look more broadly at technology in general, because obviously keyboarding is an issue that needed to be addressed, not just because of that one specific problem, but keyboarding itself is such a limited part of that we thought those folks with that endorsement needed to do. So the board decided at that time to expand the work and not just look at that one endorsement, but to really take a look at technology. Middle level came from a very specific issue that we had two issues, really, that it was connected to our elementary license, that those folks were required to get an additional license, and there were some equity pieces and some other issues that were coming up as a result of that specific rule. And then we also at the same time had stakeholders who were saying our depth of preparation for middle level teachers in general was falling short and was insufficient. And so that came sort of as a practical and a philosophical discussion that we wanted to roll into one. The reading, there had been legislative concerns with that. And the other issue that really helped move us into that was another very specific issue about a reading test for our reading specialists. And the board at that time said, well, we could go in and we could address only this one test issue, or we could recognize the fact that we've got some work to do in reading and we could kind of blow it open and allow for a more comprehensive review. So in these cases, they all started with a more isolated issue, but the board said, you know what, there's actually a much bigger policy discussion to be had in each of these areas.
Thank you. Ms. Palmer, I'm going to interrupt. We are at quorum now, so I'm going to officially call us together as a committee with quorum, and then please continue.
Okay. And you'll see some examples that are a little bit different in the coming slides. Another area that we actually have initiated rulemaking on is in program approval. And what I mean by program approval is individual licensure programs. There are over 650 in the state right now that are each approved. So all of our 32 institutions, colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota that prepare teachers have an approval for each and every licensure program, for their elementary licensure program, for their physics licensure program, for their agriculture ed program. And so that's what we're talking about here. This language is held within Minnesota Rule 8700-7600, and there are actually three things primarily contained in that rule. It's the institutional approval, broadly for each institution to prepare teachers, the specific program approval for licensure fields, and then what we currently have called experimental approval. And that's what we have used for programs that for Teach for America, for the Teaching Fellows. We recently approved one for St. Cloud State University for an experimental Mandarin Chinese program. So it's we do have language that is experimental. It's we are concerned about that language currently because it has been applied very differently across the years, and we think we can do some really meaningful work in that language as well. There also, you should know, specific to program approval, though, there is statutory language in 122A09, and I just highlighted a couple pieces of that paragraph for you. Many years ago in the 90s, you directed the Board of Teaching with this language to focus on the skills teachers need in order to be effective, and that program evaluation, program approval, needs to assure program effectiveness based on proficiency of candidates, of graduates, demonstrating program outcomes. We, to be honest with you, we have not done well in this. We have really focused on program inputs. Well, what does the syllabus look like? And, you know, how many hours of student teaching do you require? And the inputs, and we have focused less on the program outcomes, the actual performance of teacher candidates in these programs. We have done a lot of work over the last about 16 months to make sure that, to bring us into compliance with what we think is the intent and spirit of this law. So we began this redesign process in the fall of 2008. We closed that group up just this past month in January. We still have some unresolved issues, but that group's work is done. The program approval process was called PEPPER. It's now going to be called PERCA. So you, just in case you have folks that contact you, you'll know, you'll have heard PERCA. It stands for the Program Effectiveness Reports for Continuing Approval. The focus of this redesign process is continuous improvement. We don't want to be in the business of checking boxes, and if someone doesn't check the right box, then it's a punitive system, and out they go. We believe that we have the capacity and the call to be in continuous improvement with our and in continuous dialogue with our licensure programs, and so we're thrilled about how we're going to do this. Our priorities are that that it's performance-based. It really gets to the teacher candidate and what their outputs are based on their preparation. We want it to be objective. Our current system has had a level of subjectivity that that we want to remove in terms of using external reviewers. We've done the best we can to train those reviewers and be as objective as we can, but we think this new process is going to lend itself very well to a more objective process. We want it to be user friendly. We've got some work to do, even just in the use of technology. So we had a conceptual framework from this committee that had been doing the redesign work that was presented to the board in October. The board was very enthusiastic about it, and then the board initiated the rulemaking itself in November. And as I said, the committee continued to meet, work out some details, and actually we still have some details to work out. But that rulemaking is open at this time. Just so you can get a little bit of a sense, put some meat on the bones, we have three tiers of what will be required of each licensure program. There are the inputs, or the process measures, and you see them listed. SEPs stand for Standards of Effective Practice. Those are broad pedagogy standards. They'll have to demonstrate that they've embedded them into their coursework. Similarly, the content. They'll have to continue to demonstrate that they have embedded those standards into the coursework. We'll look at faculty qualifications. We'll look at clinicals and student teaching. We'll look at their assessment processes. We call those also gates. So where in a licensure program are there gates where the faculty look at a candidate and say, are they making progress? Are they not? Where are those gates along the way in the program? The tier two, we're very excited about. These are the performance measures that we're moving to. There will be a work sample data. That's a very rich and very rigorous measure that we're very excited about. It's being developed. Right now, we're working with folks actually out of Stanford and the American Association for Colleges of Teacher Education to make that a rigorous and very psychometrically sound measure. We'll also have our tests, both content and pedagogy. We'll have surveys that are being developed through a consortium, and those also, you know, they're a different kind of data, but we think that they will really help to inform programs, or us, about programs. And the student teaching rubrics will also be a performance measure. That will all culminate into the continuous improvements and data-driven decision making, and that is what we are. That's the focus of this work. That these programs will take the data that they get from their performance, from the inputs, and they'll pull it all together and make meaningful change based on the results, whether they're strong and to become stronger or whether there are weaknesses identified. When the board initiated this rulemaking in November, there were four key areas that they decided we would look at and we would focus on in the rule revision. I'm not going to read all the bullets. They're there for you. But broadly, innovation and flexibility. We do want to provide opportunities for all of our licensure programs, not just alternatives, but all programs, to be afforded the opportunity to be more innovative and to provide some appropriate and targeted strategic flexibility for them. Data-driven continuous improvements, that's the language from the statute that we are required to be doing. We need to be doing better. That's a core part of what we're doing. Cohesion and alignment, this relates to, how do we make sure that we're not overlapping, that we're maximizing our resources, that we're not redundant in our requirements from, for example, institutional approval and program approval. You can see some of the specific things we're thinking about there. And then finally, regulatory considerations. What happens when we identify gaps and weaknesses in a program? And this has not been an area that we've been very strong in before. We've identified weaknesses in programs at times and have not done much about them. And we think that this model will lend itself to really and truly a sound identification of gaps or weaknesses, and then a commitment to ongoing continuous improvement. And so that's what we're after here. Most of our programs we think will do very, very well. But if there are instances where they're not, there will be a pathway to not offering that licensure program if it's not successful. So we're excited about those pieces.
Ms. Palmer, I'm just going to give you a time check here. Sure. In terms of trying to manage the time. I'm thinking probably another 10 minutes here.
Okay.
In terms of presentation.
Yeah, I'll go very quickly. The licensure structure is something that we have not initiated rulemaking on. We hope to. You've heard a lot about the tiering of the licensure structure, and that's what we're getting after here. Currently, we've got, in terms of requirements for a teacher to renew his or her license, we've got language and statute, and you see it here listed for you. We also, of course, have several rules within the Board of Teaching rules that govern teacher license renewal. In the goals that I shared earlier, they're under the continuous improvement area. We do have a goal, and we actually had a similar goal last year, about specific to license renewal. The question here is, how can we ensure that our license renewal structure promotes meaningful, ongoing professional development for Minnesota teachers? We're not sure. In fact, we're pretty sure that our current system is not the most effective paradigm to that end. So the policy questions that we're thinking about and we've started discussing, what should an initial license represent, a renewed license represent? What do we know about the professional growth and development of teachers? How should that tie to a licensure structure? Should we expect every teacher to continue on the same trajectory? Right now our system doesn't recognize the difference between that first renewal at 5 years into practice as 25 years into practice as a veteran master teacher. There is no recognition of a teacher's continuum or growth along that. So those are the kinds of things we're thinking about. Very quickly, special education is another area that we've been working hard at for the last probably 16 to 18 months. We do not have rulemaking open on this at this time. Mr. Chair, to your earlier question, also began with a pretty specific question. It was actually one that came to us from the Autism Society of Minnesota. They wanted an autism license because if you look in our current rules, you will not see the words autism spectrum disorder. They don't exist. When they were modified last in the 90s, it was not a part of the discussion, so our current rules don't reflect that, and we think that's a problem. So it came to us as a request initially from the Autism Society. It came to the board in June of 2007. We started convening stakeholders broadly to get some initial input in 2007. And then in January, the board decided to take action. And specifically, they said, well, when it comes next fall, we are going to take this issue on. We're going to invest in it in a significant way, and we're going to do a comprehensive review of all of our special ed licenses and related issues in the next year. So that is what we've done. The objectives are here for you. We wanted to do this comprehensive review of our structure for serving students with exceptionalities, including disabilities and gifts. And then ultimately, the charge was to make recommendations back to the board about the preparation of special ed teachers and all teachers who were going to serve students with exceptionalities. So it was a big, big charge. We've done it in actually four phases of work. The first phase was in the fall and winter of 2008, where we brought broad stakeholders together, and I'll show you that list in a moment, to start looking at our current structure primarily to see whether our standards and structure were appropriate, or if we needed to look at even a different model. There are a lot of different models. States do special education preparation in a lot of different ways. So that was the work of phase one, was to look very broadly at our whole structure itself and to determine whether or not we liked it, whether or not we wanted to scrap it and start over, modify it, tweak it. So that was phase one. Phase two then took the work of phase one in terms of a whole model, and we brought in specific people with targeted expertise. So we had 11 work groups that were specific to disability areas. We had a learning disability, teachers and faculty members that were working on the LD rule. Similarly, we had an EBD group. We had a blind and visually impaired group. We had groups working on each of the different areas. We had a group specific to gifted and talented to look at that end of the student exceptionalities and dual exceptionalities as related to all of our rules. So we had these working groups flesh out this idea of a model that we were working on. Phase three was the spring of 2009, and that was actually, we brought back the phase one group, so more of the broad stakeholders, and we said, now here's the language that we came out and some more recommendations that came out of phase two from these targeted expert groups, and they were to develop final recommendations for the board. This was that phase one and phase three group, just so you can see the stakeholders that we brought to the table. I won't go through them, but they're there for your review. There are several of them in this room here. At least their organizations were represented. So as far as recommendations, what we're moving on, and again, rulemaking has not been initiated. This is all prior work. We do have revised language in all of our licensure rule areas. We are proposing a new licensure field specific to autism, and we do think that that's appropriate. It is a specific and defined body of knowledge necessary to serve students with ASD, and it's an exploding group of students in our schools. We also know that we need to recognize the need for flexibility. Special ed is already a shortage area. It is not our intent to compound that and make it worse. Therefore, this, we're calling it green only because in the initial visual, that, and you'll see it in a moment, whoever did it decided to shade it green. We don't have a name for it. It's some states call it a generalist. We haven't settled on a name yet, but there's a new licensure field that we're proposing that would be a broad-based license that would prepare teachers in four areas, ASD, EBD, LD, and DD. And that because it's a broader base, the intent is that they would not serve in the most severe settings, but that they would be prepared to serve students in a multi-categorical room where they have students on the mild or moderate end of the spectrum that have different kinds of disabilities. We also know that students don't come in these nice, neat packages. You don't necessarily have a student with a learning disability and they're in that box. There are all kinds of coexisting conditions, and we need to recognize this. We think this will be a nice option for many of our teachers. But there will be a renewal requirement as we're looking at it now, that by the end of their first 5 years that they would have to complete a licensure field in one of those four areas. So in one of those areas they would have that a real depth of preparation. This is the visual, so you can see it. But I think so I can certainly come back to you if you have questions. So currently we've got a technical writing team working out the language, making sure we have consistency and cohesion across these fields. Our anticipated timeline is that in the spring of this year, we hope that we'll have some final recommendations from the technical writing team to bring to the board, and that we might launch rulemaking. If we are efficient and all goes well, we think that by then next summer of 2011, we could adopt the rules. Of course, then our programs, our institutions need time to embed those into licensure programs, make changes. So that would be at least a year. And then maybe by the fall of 2012, we could actually have these new rules effective. These revised special ed programs could launch, and these teachers could be prepared with these new standards. We also are going to begin, just a note about, we have not currently tested in specific disability fields, and that is something we are intending to do. And that was a recommendation, actually, from stakeholders in this process. Finally, there are some other things that you see on our goals that that we know we need to be looking at other fields. So there are some non-traditional areas that we don't license for, and we're looking at specifically media arts, gifted and talented, STEM, online immersion. These are sort of non-traditional fields that we're taking a look at. We don't have any rulemaking open on these at this point, and I will stop there and certainly stand for any questions.
Ms. Baldwin, that was amazing. Right at the 10-minute mark, you are a pro. So I take it, Ms. Baumer, given the amount of work that you've shared here, that you must have a staff of about, 200 folks that are assisting?
That would be wonderful. No, we're actually a very small shop. There are just four of us full-time, and then I share a couple of staff with the Department of Education in their educator licensing. So we split their duties and share a couple folks, too.
But it sounds like you avail yourself, the Board of Teaching avails itself of the energy of lots of folks through these sort of work groups and task forces, interacting, it sounds like, with the different associations of interested stakeholders as well. Are there any questions for Ms. Pollack? Representative Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have, could you flip back to the chart where you had the green field, the green? And I was curious, the ECSE, which is what my background is, you have it separated from the ASD, DD, EBD, and LD, and yet the first contact children have with services are in the area of early childhood, and that's where the specialty is really needed in ASD, DD, LD, and EBD. So I'm wondering, did you talk at all about how you specialize for those kids who need the early intervention, how you make certain that the teachers just aren't too general and have the specific skills that are needed to make those kids advance at such a rate that maybe we don't need quite so much intervention at the upper levels?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, that is a wonderful question, and it was a source of a lot of conversation. The primary driver for what you see here, let me tell you why we did what we did or proposing what we are, and then how we're seeking to resolve the issue that you're raising. First, why we think this is going to work or why we needed to go this way is because primarily the scope is so different. The ECSE license is from birth, so it's infants, toddlers, preschool, primary, and then it cuts off about age 8 and or grade 3. The other licenses are K-12, and actually those teachers are prepared through age 21 if they're in transition programs. So as we looked at how we might integrate that, the scope became a real issue, because these teachers are prepared to serve high school students, the ASD, LD, EBD, and the ECSE are prepared to serve infants and toddlers. And so if we went that route, if we were to combine them somehow, the scope would actually have had to become even broader. And that, we thought we were going to sacrifice something in the quality of the preparation at that point. It's already a very broad scope for special ed teachers to learn how to deal with elementary, with kindergarten kids and 12th graders, or maybe 21-year-olds. That was a really long and tough discussion, quite frankly. The way we're seeking to address what you've raised is that we have targeted language embedded into the four licensure areas that you see at the top, and especially with respect to EBD, because that tends to be the one that is we see earliest. ASD, as I understand, the diagnosis tends to come in pre-K or above. 2 years, perhaps. Well, and we can go back and look at our language, but especially in the EBD, we have language there's a section of standards about collaboration and communication, and in that section, we talk about serving early learners and collaborating with early learning services and early childhood providers. And then similarly, there's collaborative language in the green light license. And in ECSE to flag to those teachers that they will need to collaborate with teachers with specific content expertise in these areas. So we're hoping to address it through the standards themselves, but not through combining them, if that makes sense.
Members, I'm going to rip some
just a quick follow-up. And I would just say, I've been dealing with the issue of autism here for the last couple of years, and the, in ECSE, I mean, it is paramount that the ECSE teachers, particularly with the increased incidence of autism and autism spectrum disorder, it is key that those teachers are properly trained. And so if you move forward in looking at the ECSE licensure, particularly as a result, you know, as it impacts the ASD, you know, I'd just be interested in you looking at it a little further and talking with you perhaps further in that, because I really think, Mr. Chair, if we're going to address the kids later in school with these issues, we need to hit them early with the appropriate education in the preschool area.
I concur with Senator Norton. I do want to move us, members. The idea here wasn't so much to, although these are great questions, it wasn't so much to get into any of the proposed work that's happening here, as much as for the committee to have a sense of the current sort of lineup of work that the board is engaged in and wanting to be engaged in. Representative Deputy, briefly, please.
Thank you very much. I seem to do this to you at the end. Just one quick question, because I was just, I'm sorry I was a few minutes late. Did you discuss the makeup of the Board of Teaching, in terms of how many educators are on the board, elected officials, and how closely do you work with this board? Do you meet often, or and what kind of input do they have into the process?
Great question. Mm-hmm. Appropriate one. Ms. Palmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Defke, yes, the board is statutorily defined in terms of its composition. We are required to have six of the 11 members as licensed teachers. So the majority of the board itself, six of the 11, are teachers. We have one higher education representative, one school administrator, and then three public members, two of whom must be current or former school board members. So that's our defined composition, and that's who we have currently serving, that we meet monthly. It's typically for on a Friday morning, sometimes over lunch through with workshops. This past month we had a workshop the night prior. And what what you would typically find if you come to a board meeting is that they would be hearing, they'll be directing me, engaging with stakeholders who bring issues forward. They decide whether they want to proceed, explore issues further. They'll direct me typically to follow up with stakeholders, do some work, come back with reports. So what you'll see at the board level is kind of a yo-yoing of they're deciding to engage an issue, wanting to get some information from the field, come back, and so on, and receive recommendations, interim reports, those kinds of things, to decide whether or not then they want to actually move forward with a policy change, and usually that's actually rulemaking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Very good question. Representative Deputy, we did not do that earlier. Well, thank you, Dr. Baumer, and you'll be sticking around because the next bill has something to do with the Board of Teaching. So.
Thank you.
So next, we have House File 2703, Representative Greiling. And I take it, Representative Greiling, you wish to move House File 2703, be recommended to pass, and I'm not sure what our pathway is here, only because it's early in the morning and I'm not all together yet.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Representative Pawlowski with Governmental Operations would like to see the bill. They cover rulemaking authority in general.
Indeed. So Representative Greiling moves the House File 2703 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's that was helpful to have Karen Baumer here and talk about the Board of Teaching. So we all have a good background of the fine work that they do, the ongoing work that they do, and the interest by the legislators on this committee in the work that they do. And I think that we're used to having substantive dialogue when things are being done that affect state statutes. And right now, that's one of the assignments that the Board of Teaching has been given through the Race to the Top application, to give them licensure discussions that intersect with some of our statutes, I believe. And so hence the genesis of this bill. And it did not come from any group. It was one of those few bills around here that legislators think up themselves working with the staff. But it is, however, supported by Education Minnesota. They had to think about it because traditionally, I believe they've been supportive of the Board of Teaching being independent. But it's kind of come to the point where some of the things being done, they now support this bill. The Minnesota Board of Teaching currently does have general statutory rulemaking authority, and that's something that agencies often have for general rules, but it's always been my preference that they would come to the legislature and discuss with us major things that they're going to do, and that is in fact what the Department of Education has to do. So this bill just lines up the current statutory requirements to come and communicate with the legislature about substantive things that the Department of Education follows. Now the Board of Teaching would have to follow that as well. And it's just completely parallel. And as I said, the Race to the Top application it gives the Board of Teaching a new authority to create a three-tiered licensure, and it's tied in with the enhanced QCOMP and the having more involvement of test scores in how people progress with their licensure. And I think that I could be surprised, but I bet you there's not too many legislators sitting at this table that wouldn't like to discuss that and not just have it done by the Board of Teaching. So this would just have legislative input. Ms. Ballmer did bring up a lot of the open rulemaking that's going on, such as the paraprofessional rulemaking and the special education initiative and so forth. And I have, when I discussed this bill, and I have discussed it with her a couple of times, and she's discussed it with their board and brought in board members, and I believe there's at least one here today to testify. I've always offered to have added to this bill any ongoing rulemaking authority that, you know, we don't need to get in the way of being added in here to be grandfathered in, because their timelines are very long. And when they're working on things, it's good for the discussion with the legislature to happen at the very beginning, or, you know, as they go along, if this committee would seem appropriate. But it's not my intention just to gum up the works for ongoing rulemaking, certainly not the paraprofessional credentialing, which, as Ms. Ballmer pointed out, we've been frustrated that it has taken so long as it is. So, Mr. Chair and members, that is basically the bill. And I do have, there's one person that I know has asked to testify from the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators.
Very well, Representative Gradley. We have Debbie Belfry, is that correct? Ms. Belfry, please come forward. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
I'm Debbie Belfry. I'm legislative co-chair for the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators and the career and technical director for Bloomington Schools. And I'm here just to talk about an experience. Ms. Ballmer talked about non-traditional licensure areas that they're now looking at in media arts, STEM initiatives, things like that, all of which impact career and technical education teachers. Under statute right now, career and technical education teachers are licensed appropriately to be able to offer media arts. And in our experience this summer, an issue came before the Board of Teaching about the media arts licensure, which in some ways would limit the opportunity for career and technical education teachers to continue teaching media arts courses. Career and technical education encompass the program areas of technology education, business and marketing, health occupations, agriculture, work-based learning, family consumer science. And we just want to be a part of that discussion. When the discussion started last summer, we heard about it as an organization. Some of our teachers heard about it. And rather than being proactive in bringing all the stakeholders together, we asked for a process where career and technical education could be a part of that discussion, which happened in November. And the Board of Teaching invited us to be a part of that discussion at that point in time. And then I also testified at the Board of Teaching meeting in January about media arts licensure. We just want to make sure that statute is followed, that districts have an opportunity to create their curriculum, as we know they do under state law, that there's a very definite curriculum process, including all stakeholders within the district, starting with teachers, professional learning communities, curriculum committees, staff development committees, as to the impact of how staff development would be impacted by any new course proposed, and also the requirement that community members are involved in discussion of curriculum in all school districts. And then, of course, decisions also include about curricular content also include our school board members. So I'm just here to support the process of including all stakeholders, as I say, in proactive discussions rather than having stakeholders be reactive in a process, and that we understand that we're all here to follow the laws that are currently on the books to create the best educational opportunities for students, and career and technical education being a part of that education, which now supports preparing students to be college and career ready and to be an integral part of providing coursework, including coursework in media arts, coursework that is now under the umbrella of STEM initiatives, science, technology, engineering, and math. And that currently those are career and technical education teachers appropriately teaching those courses under licensure. We just want to make sure that there is an opportunity for that to continue and not to become more restrictive in the process of licensure as it goes forward, and that we have these discussions proactively, aligning our systems with the Department of Education instead of becoming reactive to proposals that are brought forward and then later having to step up and be included in the process after it's already continued.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Belfry. And I totally concur with the value of and the wisdom of being involved in a proactive conversation. It's my preferred posture as well. Let me just ask the director shared with us that there's this sort of prior work that happens, or at least in some of the areas that they're looking at. Have you had an opportunity to participate in this pre-rulemaking work relative to any of the issues that your group, your association is?
The most recent one was, Mr. Chair, was on the media arts licensure, and that work and some of that discussion had started last summer, but the career and technical education teachers started finding out about that after the fact. But at the point in time that we asked to be in the discussion as a stakeholder, because our teachers are licensed appropriately to be able to offer media arts, then the Board of Teaching did invite us to meetings in November and December.
Well, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Belfry? Representative Peterson? Representative Deputy?
I'm here for the chair.
Oh, okay. Representative Deputy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate your comment about having all stakeholders involved. And I just wanted to ask you, right now, Ms. Ballmer just said that over 50% of the board that she meets with on a monthly basis are licensed teachers. I'm assuming that they are part of the stakeholders that you included. I also think that they're probably members of the teachers union, and so I would assume, since they are very involved in their voting how the Board of Teaching goes forward, that we already have the teachers stakeholders represented on the board. What are your thoughts about that?
I'll speak just to the issue, Mr. Chair. I'll speak to the issue of the media arts endorsement that was proposed. And at that point in time, career and technical education teachers, as I stated, are under statute, are teachers that can offer media arts courses. And in our case, as I said, it just wasn't a proactive discussion, bringing in the career and technical education educators. at that point in time until we asked to be a part of that group and that discussion that followed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, just a quick time check. I'd like us to get through this bill within 10 minutes here because we do have another bill that also deserves some good discussion. Representative Peterson, I believe you have a question for the author of the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's an interesting bill, and I've always believed in an autonomous board of teaching. However, I think this has some merit in terms of communication and trying to keep abreast, at least, of the constant rapid changes, both in licensure and as education changes and all the new areas of teaching that we have. By the way, I was going to ask if it was practicing teachers that were appointed to the board, but that was in the classroom currently, but that's another one issue. But the main issue that I'm concerned about is how would you, as chair of the committee, education committee, would you meet to determine which issues be brought before this committee or before the legislature? You said you didn't want to gum up the works with, you know, any small issues. Certainly the special ed licensure, for one, would be very controversial, in my opinion. So would you develop some criteria with the Board of Teaching, or how would you do that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, right now there's no provision in here to not have ongoing rules have to be subject to this following enactment. But I have discussed, the first time I discussed with Ms. Ballmer, I said, get us a list of ongoing rules that you would like grandfathered in because they're already in progress, and then we could discuss putting those in the bill here. So that's in progress. That's not in the bill at the moment. But the way that, and I specifically referenced, I would not want to slow down the paraprofessional credentialing. But henceforth, then, when there's new ideas, the Board of Teaching, which has a very well-developed long timeline already, I believe, has plenty of time to come to the legislature. They do not develop these rules in 2 months' time. You know, they often take a year or two or three, and, you know, the paraprofessional one has been taking years. So the idea that they don't have time to come and sit down with the chair of the policy committee and get scheduled to come before this committee to have some macro discussion at the legislative level ahead of time, which certainly would, in my mind, include following the state statute, which says career and technical teachers are part of the teachers who can teach media arts, and not have that somehow be left out in the discussion would be very advantageous to making sure that our students are well served and that we don't end up coming to the legislature in midstream with discussions that could have taken place if we had a good broad-based macro discussion at the from the onset. And it could be you know, just a very small statutory inclusion in the policy bill for a topic that the legislature totally trust the Board of Teaching to do. Just say they're authorized to develop special education licensure for whatever. Or it might mean that Representative Norton wanted to include in that some discussion of early childhood or whatever that would be listed in a macro way in our policy bill. But it doesn't have to be some very detailed thing. But when we have things like three-tiered licensure, then the legislature might be more interested in putting in a little more macro policy discussion that we want to make sure there are certain parameters that are followed. I myself would like to say that our current statute for QCOMP should be the current criteria for the involvement in test scores in teacher licensure parallel with the current QCOMP. You know, others may disagree, but then we could have that discussion here rather than by a state agency that's reflective, very reflective right now, of the appointments coming from the governor's office, who were very involved, unlike the legislature, in the race to the top application. To me, that's not the full involvement of all elected officials, which I think comes out with the best policy. It may not always be pretty, but in the end, I think common sense is more apt to prevail when you have more viewpoints involved.
We're probably about 7 or 8 minutes away from finishing the bill, members. And again, I'm just trying to keep us on track. Representative Grant, very quickly, so it is the intent of the author to grandfather in some of the work that's currently in play, but we don't have that language before us at this point. It would be, obviously, from this chair's perspective, preferable that this committee, being the policy committee, be able to vet what those grandfathered provisions are, consistent with what you just stated. So we'll have to, assuming this bill moves forward, we'll have to figure out how we can best make sure that this body can speak to that issue. I have Representative Downey and Representative McClellan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, kind of following on your comments, I feel like I'm being asked to vote on something here that is different from the intent that I'm hearing in description here. And let me just make a comment, and you can respond, and then and we can move forward. But you started by saying that you just kind of philosophically felt like the legislature should be involved in some of these activities at the Board of Teaching. And actually, I concur. I think there's a lot of things going on in early ed and other places where there's lots of really important content dimensions to what we're doing that the legislature just learns about after the fact. So I think probably you and I are aligned on that. The bill, however, I think as it's written, has some problems. It says that they can amend any existing rules or create new rules only with the specific legislative authority. And yet down below, it says it doesn't prohibit the board from making technical changes or corrections or repealing rules. And so it seems like we've got conflicting mechanisms there. And so it's not real clear to me where they could do something without legislative authority and where they couldn't. And you mentioned that you didn't want to gum up the works for existing rulemaking, and yet we do want to gum up the works for at least one component of rulemaking. And we talked, had some discussion here about the specific areas where maybe you might like to see it or not see it. And so I'm wondering if a better bill wouldn't be to describe the process by which the legislature could or should express its will to the Board of Teaching as compared to trying to ask us to vote on something where we don't really know what we're voting on, with some hypotheticals and, frankly, some mechanisms in the bill that seem to slightly contradict themselves. So. Anyway, I'll leave that as a comment and say I don't quite know what I should do with this bill, so I'm probably going to vote no here today, even though we might actually be aligned kind of philosophically on some key points. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Downey. And I whatever, however way the chair would like me to come back and discuss this as we get further language, whether it's just an informational hearing or whatever, I would welcome that and hope that we do. The language we have here, Representative Downey, is for clarity exactly what applies and has for a few years for the Board of Teaching or the Department of Education, which is why we have this language. I did have actually a very thoughtful person wonder why are we including or repealing rules adopted by the board, and if you would like to strike that language in a friendly amendment, I would take it. I just said no to the other thoughtful person because I wanted to have the clarity of saying this is exactly what the Department of Ed has to do. But I like it better if we took out or repealing rules adopted by the board. So even that would have to come back to us if they decided to repeal some rules. So I would leave it to you, Representative Downey, if you would ask for that. But I would consider that a friendly amendment should you choose to do it.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll pass on that. I don't feel like I could offer anything real thoughtful here. I think there's maybe a broader rethinking as compared to just a specific oral amendment on the fly here. So thank you for the opportunity, but I'll pass.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, I want to clarify some things that you just stated. You talked about that the legislature should have some policy discussion, and how does that seems different than legislative authority. I mean, yes, we can have a discussion, but do we have to have a bill passed before they can do anything at the Board of Teaching because of this then?
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, yes, we do. And I stress at a macro level. It doesn't have to be a 10-page bill. It could be a 2-line bill, or it could be, you know, a 10-line bill, or it could be a 10-page bill, but that would be our decision.
Representative McFarland.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I guess I have a concern because of our legislative calendar. and with the Race to the Top initiative that's coming forward, if these things aren't decided before the end of our session, they would have to wait till next session, and by the time we finish the process, that would inhibit the Board of Teaching from even starting their process. And I find that maybe a big concern. So do you have any response to that?
Yeah,
Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland, I am quite confident that a three-tiered licensure will not be completed even if preliminary work were to be done before they start official rulemaking, which they could do anything informally before we get back into session next year.
Representative
McFarland. And thank you. And one other thing, I'm wondering how the department feels about this and if they would come and say a few words.
And I will certainly ask for anyone who wants to testify and go to come forward. Looks like someone's working their way down, but while we do that, why don't we do it now? We do have two other members have questions. The members, we are 2 minutes away from my self-prescribed deadline here. Commissioner Klinzing.
Thank you, members of the committee. Chair Mariani, my name is Karen Klinzing, Assistant Commissioner in the Minnesota Department of Education. I'd first like to establish that the Race to the Top application does not give authority to create a tiered licensure system to the Board of Teaching. It was stated to you that it does, and it does not grant authority. The only body that can grant authority is sitting before me right now. So I want you to be clear that when you read the application, you read the language. And what we did is we proposed that the Board of Teaching would take that kind of licensure under consideration. We probably will take a huge hit in points on the application for that. Rumor on the street, we're very weak on licensing in our Race to the Top application. So any sort of proposal here today that tries to assert that we're going way beyond our authority at the agency, which we have no authority, by the way, in licensing, is a little bit beyond the pale, because it doesn't reflect what's in the application, nor does it reflect the rules and procedures that must be followed statutorily according to our state. I am the liaison for the board, for the agency to the board. We do not have the authority to make decisions around licensing. I think that goes to the importance that this state has placed on licensing in both the Board of School Administrators and the Board of Teaching over the years. The fact that they've removed that sort of policy decision making to another deliberative body outside of the agency, I think, is shows the purpose that they want for licensing. It shows the import of the purpose in licensing. The Board of Teaching does spend a lot of time dealing with issues such as the one that was brought before you today with the career and technical education license. Ironically, even though it was testified that there's this really strong bond between the Department of Education and Board of Teaching, I have to say there are a number of times where we are completely on different pages. And we, just like you, sit down and meet with the board, with the executive director, to let our views be heard. And actually, the one brought to you today is a very good example of that. But this is more of what you will need to work with if you decide to take on the roles that the Board of Teaching has been playing for many years. We do think it'll elongate the process immensely, not because the board doesn't want to sit down with the chair and discuss what rules need to be made for the year, but because, as was pointed out by Representative McFarland, once that the board chair, that the executive director and the board chair sit down with the chair of the committee, first of all, that may not be able to happen until close to January. It might happen before that, but the chair of your body cannot possibly get anything introduced into the body until January. Some of these things have to take place between May and January. And if they don't, if we slow that down, then you just need to be cognizant of the fact you're not just slowing it down to January, but actually to May, when you will have finished deliberating whether to actually even grant the authority. And we do run into problems with this, with our actual authority to do rulemaking around standards. Sometimes, by the time it gets decided here and we get to start the committees to do the public input, the informal process that we also have for standards, by the time we finish that and get through the rulemaking process, we're getting very close to even getting done on time according to Chapter 14. So it's very tough to do both the informal process and the formal process required under that process. So we don't think that that is a good thing for the Board of Teaching to be dealing with on some of these licensure issues.
Commissioner, I'm going to move you along because I'm 5 or 6 minutes beyond my prescribed.
Okay.
Deadline. I do want to hear from the Board of Teaching, too. So if you can wrap up, it'd be great.
So I just want to point out again that it's clear that Race to the Top is what was the impetus for this, that what we wrote into the Race to the Top application was language that we felt and we vetted through a number of stakeholders reflected the statutory process that is required in this state and the rulemaking process, and that we don't say that we're establishing a tiered licensure system, but rather we're proposing that it be discussed by the Board of Teaching, just like the process was already happening prior to the Race to the Top application. In fact, the tiered licensure discussion did not come up as a result of some think tank in the governor's office. It came up as a result of stakeholder input in Board of Teaching workshops long before the Race to the Top application ever was put out in RFP. So I think that the Board of Teaching has done a fine job of doing both informal and formal public input processes, and I hope that you will think about that when you're making this decision today, because it's not the license that defines the effective teacher, it's the effectiveness of the teacher in the classroom. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see Ms. Ballmer is queued up here, so please come forward. This has to do with the Board of Teaching, so it's appropriate we hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I will be as brief as possible. I think it's very important to state as an underlying or an overarching principle, we do not disagree with what I think is the spirit and intent of this rule. I think the transparency, the dialogue is really critical. That is not a problem. That is, in fact, something that we welcome, and quite frankly, we know that should we go off in a direction that it doesn't align with legislative priority or spirit, that either our rules that we establish can be repealed or we can be undone. And we have history to prove that with the Board of Education. And so we're very cognizant of our standing in that way. So to the extent that we can be transparent and have that open dialogue, we do wish to do that and engage that in a meaningful way. Our concerns around this bill lie in both the philosophical and the practical arenas, and I think you've heard a little bit of both, and I have shared these with the author as well. We do have a limited purview. It is teacher preparation, teacher licensing. Now, that is really important work. We think what we do is very important. It's limited. It's a small piece of the educational pie, but it's a really important one. So I recognize that you have a very strong stake and interest in these issues. We are subject to Chapter 14, which is the rulemaking chapter. That process by design is long, arduous, very inclusive. We are required by that chapter to have a notice plan that requires us to notify every possible stakeholder on any rulemaking initiative. It is approved by an administrative law judge prior to moving forward in the process. We are required as part of the process to contact the chairs of the legislative committees relating to our area. Those kinds of things. Any controversial issue will go to a hearing where an ALJ will preside. We'll hear public testimony. We'll receive written testimony. There are two public comment periods. So the rulemaking process itself is not one that can be done behind closed doors and the board just deciding what we think might be best. It's a heavily engaged process, very inclusive of all stakeholders. So that, I think, is an important piece of context. Beyond that, I think that hopefully it's clear that we've demonstrated a commitment to engaging stakeholders even prior to initiating rulemaking. I think I would like to clarify with respect to the media arts, we are very well aware of the statutory constraints that and controversy that lies around that area. The board's discussion is not about the placement of standards within courses. Absolutely not. That's not our purview. We can't engage that issue. What we have talked about and what was brought to us by the Purpich Center for Arts Education and the University of Minnesota as a stakeholder group of ours as a proposal was this media arts license idea, which would provide one more possible type of teacher to offer the media arts credit. not taking it away from other folks. So that's our discussion. We can't decide where standards go, and we shouldn't, and we can't pretend that we do. That's not our purview. But so we are in those discussions. At this point, the board has not made any decision about where to go on that particular one. But so those are sort of some of the philosophical pieces. As far as practical, the timelines, as Representative Greiling shared, these are long processes. We do know ahead of time what we're working on. I don't dispute that. And we will, should this become law, we will work with you in advance to the extent possible. We do have concerns, though, about the timing. Should there be anomalies like 2008 where there was no policy bill, that doesn't usually happen. But in the rare circumstances, that could really impair our work. If we propose something and for some odd reason or technicality, the rule doesn't go, the language isn't exactly what we thought, it could either significantly change what we have worked on, and maybe that's a good thing, or it could impair our possibility of moving forward on some of these initiatives. We do want to be at the table in terms of discussing these. Whether there might be modification of the proposed language in terms of mandatory notification that would exceed our rulemaking requirements. We wonder if there are other possibilities in terms of meeting what I believe to be the intent in terms of transparency, open dialogue. We certainly are happy to do that, but do have concerns about what is proposed at this point. So I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. We still have Representative Loon on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, I'm not going to ask any more questions other than just to state I have concerns about this proposal, and I think I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify for or against the bill? If not, Representative Greiling renews her motion that House File 2703 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Representative Kath, House File 2880. And Representative Kath, I apologize to you. The chair has gone over 10 minutes his schedule, which may mean we may wind up not acting on your bill today. We'll see. Representative Kath, you wish to move your bill, House File 2880, be recommended to pass. And is there a pathway here that we should?
I believe refer to the Committee on K-12 Finance.
And refer to the Committee on K-12 Finance. Representative Kath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill that I'm presenting you today is House File 2880, actually originated with Senator Amy Koch over in the Senate due to a connection that we had with some stakeholders in our public schools, specifically a principal in the Buffalo School District, as well as then some members of the Owatonna Public Schools that had addressed the same situation to me. And that is that right now when we're taking a look at grad tests and the requirements for retakes on those, right now we're looking at about a six-week remediation, a minimum of 6 weeks, as well as then the examination itself. And what they're finding is that if they could shorten that up to about 2 weeks, to go to a four-week, then with testing, they found that the opportunities for remediation as well as opportunities for those students to be able to take those tests would be much farther beneficial for those kids. And so what we're looking at here is looking for seniors only having this opportunity, being they are on more of a condensed timeline in which to get some of these remediations. And for some of them, it is on multiple exams. And so we're looking at the process by which some of these school districts are trying to, first of all, help a student to graduate, not only by getting required coursework for graduation, but then also the required remediation in order to take the grad test itself. The bill itself does two different things. First of all, it says that it requires any student who does not pass the math or reading grad test to have at least 4 weeks of remediation before retaking the test. And then it says that they must exempt rulemaking authority, which means that this statute would then have to supersede rulemaking that's already in the department, which would then be sufficient to say that the rule would be changed to 4 weeks. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
And it's probably helpful at this point to ask the department to come down, testify, and then we'll go straight to questions to both the department and to the author.
Great.
Dr. Mattson, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to join you for a second time this week. Give you a quick background on some of the thoughts that the department has regarding the bill language, and certainly recognize the issues that Representative Catt has brought to the table here and worthy of consideration. Just some specifics on this bill. The language as currently drafted actually is more rigorous than current statute or rule. And in its current language, we'd be supportive of it. Current Minnesota rule says that a student has to have up to 6 weeks for remediation. This bill says that a senior must have 4 weeks of remediation. There's obviously a difference there. Given the intent that there's a difference here to allow seniors to have more retakes, just some things for the committee's attention regarding this bill. The item informed development plan for the grad test was created around what is currently now in statute and rule, allowing for essentially another a retest every other month, as Representative Catt has mentioned. To maintain a fair and objective assessment of students' knowledge and skills without compromising test security, additional test forms would need to be created in both math and reading. So this would be an increased cost to the department, and we would recommend a fiscal note would be appropriate for this. If additional forms are not created, the department would have no choice but to recycle forms for seniors. And essentially, I could almost make a Joe Namath prediction to say that we will increase the pass rates that way. However, stakeholders would not be able to determine whether we're able to attribute that to an increase in mastery of knowledge and skills or simply because the senior is more familiar with the test forms we've developed and they're seeing those for either a second or a third time. Two other quick points. Recall that current statute allows students to review their test forms and answers after completing the assessment. So therefore, the current number of test forms is even further subject to exposure and test security risks if additional forms are not created. Likewise, then introducing this immediately upon enactment would not allow for additional development time for these items and forms. So there are just some logistical items behind the scenes of developing forms in order to maintain test security that the department would have some concerns about. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mattson. Are there any questions? Representative Foss.
My question is for Representative Kath. I agree with what you're trying to do here. My concern is that my superintendents were by yesterday, and they said, you know, please don't do this, and please don't do this, and we need this, and we need this. And at the end, I go, well, I wish I could do all those things for you, but I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to. And finally they said, well, at least don't give us any more unfunded mandates. And unfortunately, this kind of falls into that category. So unless you've got an idea on how to pay for this, because if the schools are going to have to give those 4 weeks of extra school, somehow it's going to cost more money.
Well, already before they would offer the test, they have to give some form of remediation. There's no question about that. And so really what this is doing is I don't believe it is an unfunded mandate. What it's saying is that it's requiring then those 4 weeks, and then there would be a test every 4 weeks for that, being that the department then would have to offer more examination possibilities.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kath, I wonder, do you have any data in your district about the success rate for students after 4 weeks of remediation? I know ours isn't really great, so I wondered about that. And then the other question is this going to address the issue that was raised the other day with regard to math in particular, where we have the exemption where the kids are taking the test real quick twice in order to not have to take it again and be able to graduate? So I wondered if those, and then I just wanted to mention, to the department, I guess I don't have the same concerns that you do about students with having to have a new form every time. I mean, at some point you're not going to remember the test that you've taken, and the fact that they can pass a test that they've taken already just means they've learned the information. So I guess I'm not as concerned with yours having a new test every single time, that I think several tests and then if they recycle isn't a concern to me. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Representative Kemp.
First off, I think it is dependent upon the local district to set up what that remediation looks like. And when Senator Koch and I were kind of looking at this and she formulated the language, one thing that was very critical for her and something that I had to kind of hedge on a little bit with her language was the fact that it did set up 4 weeks. And so what it was making as a statement is that it's got to be a minimum. So in other words, what we're trying to say is that a student shouldn't be taking this test every 2 weeks. It shouldn't be something of the fact that we're trying to breeze through this. But the fact is that we're trying to give more testing opportunity. And what it's saying to the department then is that we should offer these retakes every month, which would then require 4 weeks in between it. So henceforth, 4 weeks would be the standard by which we would do this. Right now, it's every other month, and so it's actually 8 weeks between the two times that the test is taken, but yet it's a minimum of 6 weeks of remediation. Or you could go 8 weeks of remediation. So what we're looking at here is giving students just more opportunities in which to have the opportunity to pass these exams, as well as for districts to offer remediation. If a district chooses to say that we want to do 8 weeks of remediation before that student takes the test, they have the right to do that. We're just setting a minimum here now of 4 weeks, so we're actually being a little bit more stringent in saying we need 4 weeks of remediation before it would happen, because that would be the next time the test would even be offered.
Deborah?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little bit in the same lines as Representative Norton. Number one, why 4 weeks? Why not three
just
and a half?
Of,
why not four and a half? What's the data for 4 weeks?
Really, it's just that we were trying to, Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, we were trying to look at it from the context of saying that if we offered it now instead of every other month a retake, just offering it once a month. And that once a month, then the time between when we would have the data that a student did not pass would be then the 4 weeks before then they could take the next examination.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question more directly is, why do we set a time frame? Schools are responsible, and the teachers are responsible, and the administrators are responsible. The school district is responsible for the kids, the students, to know the material. Why are we here setting parameters and telling them when they should give tests, when they shouldn't give tests? Why are we doing that? Why are we not letting them make decisions about how best to get their kids to learn this material?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The fact is that the department sets the standards by which we say that a student must pass these examinations. We're trying to afford more opportunities for those students to have that examination. And so the school is bound by our statute and state law that says that these students must pass these examinations. So what our movement behind this, Senator Koch and I, are trying to say that we want to give as many opportunities for a student to be remediated as well as to have the opportunity to take the exam. I would be amenable to say that we can look at this to say, would you rather it be read a minimum of 4 weeks versus 4 weeks of remediation? So we could look at it from that standpoint, but what we're trying to do here is afford as many opportunities as possible for our students, specifically our seniors in this case, to be able to graduate.
Well, I understand. Thank you, Mr. I understand that, Representative Kath. My question is, why can't schools make that decision for themselves? I think they're interested in the kids having maximum opportunities. I think they're interested in the kids passing, also the students. Why can't they make the decision? Why do we have to do that here?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer, they cannot make the decision yet as to when they offer the grad test because they have now a timeline of only every other month. And so what we're trying to afford is school districts, local districts, more flexibility in opportunities to afford that opportunity to their kids.
Representative Liu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I had a few questions for Representative Kath. First of all, and maybe this is defined somewhere in statute, but I'm getting the sense that maybe it's not from listening to the discussion. But what constitutes remediation? I mean, is that determined individually by each school district? So some may do an hour after school every day, some may do every other day, some may do a once-a-week course. What is remediation?
I'll let the department answer as well, but my understanding for what our statutorily is that it is under local control.
Dr. Matza, that's my understanding too, but I think you're probably the authority on this.
Correct, Mr. Chair. Statute and Minnesota rule make no specific requirement of any length or content of the remediation, just that it occur.
Representative Blue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Kath, if you say 4 weeks, I guess I'm struggling with how to, if locally that's defined as how it's composed or how it's created, how does the 4 weeks work with all those individual decisions? And secondly, I'll just add this on, and you can address it in either order you'd like to. I'm wondering, is this is your impetus for offering this legislation because of complaints that you're hearing from students not being offered adequate remediation, or what's driving you to offer this?
Representative Kath.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, really the impetus was never behind the remediation structure. It was about the affording of an opportunity for students to be able to look at this. When you're looking at a school year in general, you're looking September to June. And if a student takes a test, starts out with a six-week remediation, but really has 8 weeks from the beginning of the school year when they can first take a grad retake, now you're looking at eight additional weeks afterwards if they do not pass that that first round. So what we're looking at here is that a school district would have actually more opportunities to look and reflect upon their remediation and how it is that they're offering remediation to their students. And I think that's what's key here, is that we're not saying, we are not redefining remediation. We are not stating to those school districts what you can and cannot do and what you think is affording the best opportunity for your kids. We are actually offering more opportunities for a district to say, here is what we can do with remediation. Here are the testing opportunities that we can lay out for our kids. For instance, my school district, Owatonna Public Schools, we do a four-period day. And that four-period day, one of the things that we have done for our reading test is we have placed those students in an extra course, which is a remediation course. The course is 8 weeks long. Within that 8 weeks, then, that person would definitely be able to have a retake opportunity because it would be offered within that month. And so what we're looking at here is affording more opportunities for our school districts, a buffet of more suggestions that they can offer to those students so that they can move forward in their senior year only, move forward in their senior year to be able to pass and graduate.
Members, we're going to vote in 60 seconds. Dr. Matson, looks like you want to take that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one further comment. I'm sorry that Representative Norton stepped out. But the issue is not solely about whether, I'm going to go back to just form creation. We've got the logistics to be able to do this pretty well. There is security risk, not just with that student having it, but we are putting the same form back in circulation every year. The standards for educational and psychological testing that I'm bound to follow in developing the program would require that in a high-stakes assessment situation, which this is, that the highest levels of security be done. So obviously I am bound by those, but I'm bound by state statute, so I make a decision when depending on what passes. So, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Manson. Members, with that, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on the bill in the room? With that, members, Representative Kathryn Nunes' motion that House File 2880 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kath and Dr. Madsen. Representative Demmer, would you be so kind as to move our minutes of February 17th?
Well, Mr. Chair, I did look at them, and yes, I'll move that.
Wonderful. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, this committee stands adjourned.